Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is Sean Payton, head coach of the New Orleans Saints. What's with this Saints happy cast? This has to be the worst Saints podcast in the world. Ralph can't say anyone's name right. Andrew doesn't know football. Everyone has a hard time listening to Dave. And is Kevin even there tonight? The audio with this podcast, my God, the audio, it's painful.
All right, everybody, welcome to another edition of Saints Happy Hour Podcast. We are wrapping up Saints-Bucks divisional playoff week in style. We convinced Zach Strief to join us again, friend of the podcast. Zach, how are you doing today?
Gentlemen, I'm doing very well. It's good to get a chance to catch up with you.
Yeah, man. I have to say, you know, the thing that sucks about COVID, besides the obvious, is that I was really excited about having our second live show at Port Orleans this year. And, you know, our first was at Tracy. We had a big crowd. It was a great turnout. But in my head, it was a special night at Port Orleans with more fans, better vibes. So I'm sad it didn't happen, Zach, but hopefully we can see you here soon and do that.
We can all certainly hope that that the rest of our lifetimes are not like that, and the brewery's not going anywhere, and so we're ready and waiting for the worst Saints podcast that John says to come into our facility.
I don't know if we're the worst podcast. We definitely have the worst host. So. Zach, you know, I want to start with the real important stuff, because people come to this podcast, they want football breakdown, tape analysis. So I need you to explain to me, does Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, CeeDee Deuce, when you're around his presence, do you just automatically want to punch him? Does he exert like a pheromone where you're like, I gotta punch that dude in the face? Like, what is he? What's his secret magical power that everyone that comes in contact with him wants to punch him in the face?
I'll tell you what, it's so impressive, right? I mean, it just, yeah, there may not be a question that Saints fans have on their minds more in the last couple. Like, what is he saying? Like, how good is he at getting under people's skin that he's now convinced the Bears twice to punch him on the field and get kicked out of a game? So it's certainly fascinating to see a guy have that type of impact on people around him. You know, I was never on the team with Chauncey, so I don't have a ton of experience with him. But I do know his rookie year in the Saints locker room, it's kind of arranged by position, and it kind of just kind of floats around the room. So it's running backs, then wide receivers, tight ends, offensive line. Then it kind of makes a turn on the back wall, and then it's DBs, turns again into the quarterbacks, then linebackers and D-line. That's kind of the arrangement. So the DBs and the offensive linemen are next to each other. And I remember sitting down after a training camp practice his rookie year, and I'm sitting next to Teron Armstead, and we're just kind of talking about practice. And Chauncey comes up, and he's chirping, and it's all like in jest, right? It wasn't like he was really angry or anything, but talking. And he gets up from his locker and walks away, and I look at Teron, and I say, is he always like that? And he goes, he never stops talking. He's like, it's unbelievable. It's just, he goes, he's got so much energy. It just never shuts down. And I think he's probably one of those guys when he's your teammate, and he's in your locker room, it's like
he's
funny,
best.
Right? That he's just like, just kind of this guy that's bouncing around all the time.
Well, unless you're Michael Thomas.
Well, fair enough, right? And then when you're on the other side of it, right, which somebody may have found themselves on the other side of it in that situation, He's just very good at it. And I think it's probably also effective because he's a good football player. And, you know, when you're playing football and people are talking, your immediate instinct is always to physically win, whatever that means, right? If you're a wide receiver and you're, you know, the DB's chirping at you, you want to catch a ball, right? I mean, that's your answer. That's your response. If you're an offensive lineman, you want to take a guy down to the ground, right? And so if you're losing to him as well, and that's what I think we saw with the Bears over and over and over again, is he won't stop talking. He's relentless, but he's also winning every time. And so you just run out of response options, right? Like you're out. Okay. I can't say anything else. Right. He keeps it's like he's reloading his ammunition because he keeps winning. I don't have any options left. I'm just going to punch him. And so it's kind of that combination of being really good at talking and also performing on the field well enough to back some of it up.
Do you guys remember that scene from Dumb and Dumber where Lloyd Christmas, yeah, Jim Carrey's character, he's like, do you want to hear the most annoying sound in the world? And he's in the car and then he just goes, and like, that's what I picture Chauncey Gardner-Johnson to his opponents.
Somebody tweeted at me during the game when Wims dropped that touchdown pass. He said, Ralph, Vegas has taken the odds of CeeDee Deuce getting punched by a Bears receiver off the board. Like, you knew when that happened that eventually it was going to go to a place, like you said, where they just ran out of responses, where the response is just, I have to punch you in the face. And the thing is, he doesn't even act like it happened. Like, that's the thing. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, you take the first one, right, with Javon Wims in Chicago. I mean, I guess you're giving credit, right? Like, he took two punches to the face with no response, which is pretty incredible, right? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, once somebody throws the first punch, usually there's a punch that returns. And it's really how you identify that Chauncey's not mad or angry. Chauncey likes to talk, and he likes to get underneath people's skin. And he's okay with them being the ones that respond. He's okay with it. And I think that's, you know, that's the line that Chauncey's going to have to learn. This is not going away. Chauncey's not going to stop this, right? This isn't like, okay, we saw it in his second year, but now we're not going to see it anymore. That's who he is. That's how he was at you know, in Florida. It's part of the reason why the Saints got Chauncey where they did in the draft, because he rubbed some people the wrong way. And, you know, for him, it's all going to be about, can you continue to control yourself to where, you know, it's not hurting your own team? You know, I mean, you look at that. I mean, listen, the officials are going to know. I think that there's probably, I'd be real curious to hear from an official. Well, what exactly was his, you know, what's his penalty for? They know that he's the one that's causing people to do that, but is it really a penalty to talk so much trash to a guy that he has to punch you? I've never seen it in the rule book before, but you know, they know that it's him, and he's going to continue to get called for it. It's just a question of, you know, when it starts hurting the team, then Chauncey will have to deal with Sean's response to that and Mickey's response to that. And otherwise, you know, as long as he's not hurting the Saints, man, nobody's going to stop him. I mean, he's clearly getting people
it's like
thinking
that old
of what they shouldn't be thinking of, right?
It's like
Anthony Miller's running around the field like, I'm going to punch him.
It's like that old Dukes of Hazzard line. It's like the old Dukes of Hazzard line when Roscoe P. Coltrane, he would arrest the Duke boys, and they would say, what are you arresting me for? And he would say, because you're the Dukes, and I know you did something wrong. I think that's with the referee. Yeah, they exactly just throw the flag on CeeDee because they know whatever he said is probably horribly, horribly offensive.
Yeah, I guess, right? I mean, Chauncey could be selling. I mean, if he recorded himself, he could sell it right now. Because, I mean, who is not curious about what exactly is coming out of his mouth, right? There's no way you're just like, oh, you suck, right? Like, it's like some pretty creative, like, I wonder if he studies it. Does he investigate, like, the guy? Like, you just wonder, like, man, how does one guy do that as well as he does? Because it is every game. They don't punch him every game, but they look like they want to every game.
Football is in full effect, with many teams strutting their stuff. You might not be at the game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any other place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, well, Zach, I want to plug your Tuesday night show real quick because I love it, and I think it's the best hour of Saints audio, besides us, of course, every week. And yes. and you have a show with Mickey Loomis, and I find it embarrassing that I didn't really know about the show until recently, but you get all these ridiculous guests. Like your most recent show, you're rolling with Mickey Loomis, and you got Bill Polian on there, Aaron Andrews, Vince Vaughn. And well, now you're stuck with Ralph. So
yeah.
I guess life comes at you fast. But yeah. I just wanted to plug that real quick because, this is a show that you're working on now and it's just tremendous.
Well, I appreciate that. You shouldn't be embarrassed. You didn't know about it. I should be embarrassed because that's probably, on me of doing a better job of promoting it. But yeah, we're doing this show every Tuesday. It's a year round show. You know, during the season in particular, you know, Mickey will be on every week in the off season. We'll give him some days off, but it's been really fun because it's almost variety. You know, I'm not going to interview Vince Vaughn and talk about sports the whole time. Right. But he's a fascinating guy. You know, that was very much a fanboy experience for me because I'm like right in that demographic, right. I'm 37. So, you know, when Vince is in his heyday, right. 2003, I'm 20. Like I couldn't be any dumber at, you know, that's like the dumbest phase of my life. So old school and Wedding Crashers, like those were big for me. So, yeah, we had all them on. Aaron Andrews was really fascinating, but we've had some really cool guests this year. We had Dub and Burt Jones on. So, you know, Dub is the only other living member of the six touchdown club that Alvin joined this year. He did it in 1952, I believe. He's also the son of Burt Jones. And so, you know, former offensive player of the year in the NFL, former LSU Tiger.
LSU, really yeah.
Outstanding player in his own right. But, you know, listen, you get to talk to Dub. You know, he's in his 90s. He was all there. We had a really cool conversation. He played with Otto Graham with the Browns, right? So I'm a Northwestern guy. I'm like, oh, my gosh, like Otto Graham is – right. I mean, he's like our great hope, right? Like we can produce, you know, like the best. We haven't done it in 70 years, but you know, it happened once. He played under Paul Brown. Like, it's just really fascinating. He was the first NFL player to ever go in motion, right? Like, it's really cool. It's like interviewing a history book. So, we had Fred Hayes on. Fred was one of the three astronauts on Apollo 13. Again, 83 years old, remembers down to the name of the instrument panel that he was reading to decide whether they had enough oxygen to get back to Earth. I mean, just really fascinating stuff. And the Saints have been fantastic helping, you know, with those guests. We've had PGA golfers, Ryan Palmer was on. And then of course, you know, getting a chance to sit with Mickey and have a more in-depth conversation. I think this off season is going to be really fascinating. About their cap, you know, the cap, and like, I'll, you know, we'll get Kai Harley on there, who's the magician that everybody really should know. He's the cap manager for the Saints. So, you know, Mickey gets all the credit, but it's really Kai Harley, you know, just to talk a little bit about, you know, how they, this year is a little bit different, but you know, they've been managing the cap so effortlessly. It seems like over the last decade when, you know, there seems to be no money, somehow Kai finds ways to get money. So, it's a good show. It's on every Tuesday, 7 to 8. I'm glad you liked it. Yeah. So, and we'll post the full interviews, on WWL's website after the air.
Beautiful. Well, hey, I feel the same way about Vince Vaughn, 'cause we're about the same age. And I just feel like if I had an opportunity to interview him, it would be one of these like hey, do you remember that scene when you did that? That was pretty funny. And how about that scene? Like, it would be horrible. So
they filmed Swingers. They filmed Swingers like a guerrilla film because they had no money and they would go places they weren't supposed to go and film stuff. Like how they did Swingers it's an amazing article. Google Swingers and Ringer, and it's an amazing oral history if you're a Vince Vaughn fan, by the way.
Yeah, and Vince kind of mentioned that, you know, that it was like we didn't even think that was going to ever get put like in an actual theater. And you know, you think back to those guys at that time, right? Vince Vaughn and John, it's like those guys have had a huge role in like movie history in my life. Right. And they were essentially unknowns at that time. You know, I asked them like, do you go into your career? Like, hey, I'm a comedy guy, kind of started in drama, but really, you know, he hit that stretch in the middle. He's like, no, he's like, you meet a couple people, you go film a movie. He's like, we were young, we were idiots. Like, we were just trying to make like funny jokes for ourselves. Right. He's like, it was like a frat party on set. And, you know, you just get on a roll and one of them gets, you know, people come to see one and then you get the ability to make 10 of them. So it was fascinating. He's like, for me, I know he's not maybe like written in the like the top echelon of actors in history, but probably more impactful than most in my life.
Nice. All right. Well, let's talk about this playoff game. So, you know, I think this is probably true of most Saints fans, but Ralph is maybe like the example on steroids. So
here we go.
Ralph is like a cocoon of fear when it comes to playoff games. And if there's like five stages to grief, Ralph's arc of playoff feelings is like 15 stages. So like he picked the Bucks on our show on Monday night. Then he picks the Saints in his column on Tuesday. He's all over the place.
I might pick the Bucks again when I go on WWL Friday.
Right. So, Zach, like, help us remove the emotion from this a little bit. I know there are tons of variables that go into a playoff game, but can you help, like, just taking the emotion out of it, X's and O's, what are the variables in this game?
Well, there's, you know, there's kind of the obvious, you know, elephant in the room in that they've already played them twice and beat them twice, right? And I think there's this perceived belief that it's hard to beat a team three times. I understand why people make that assumption. The statistics don't really bear that out, right? 14 of the 21 teams to beat a team twice in the regular season and see them in the playoffs beat them again, including the Saints fairly recently, right? The reality is it's hard to beat playoff teams. So it's certainly hard to beat a playoff team three times, which is why you don't see it a lot, right? I think that those first two games have zero bearing on this game. I don't think they have any bearing on it whatsoever. It's not like Tampa Bay is angry, right? Like, it's a playoff game. Everybody is trying their hardest, no matter what. Like, it's almost hard to say anything motivates you in the playoffs other than it being the playoffs, right? So that I think leads to a lot of the fear. Obviously Saints fans are traumatized, right? It's been a rough 3 years to be a Saints fan, to have all that promise and then not only not have it go how you want, but have it end how it has. You know, it's interesting, like going into this week and then having Bill Polian on. Bill Polian lost three straight Super Bowls in Buffalo. Okay, he was the GM in Buffalo when they lost the first three of four in a row. So probably nobody on the planet understands the feelings that Ralph is having better than Bill Polian, right? As a matter of fact, he made a joke. Nobody has ever been as good at losing Super Bowls as I have. He went to five and lost four of them.
Oof.
So, you know, it's including one to the Saints, right? So I understand why people have fears. If you look at this game on its surface, you say, hey, how do these two teams match up, right? The Saints are a bad matchup for the Bucks. And why are they a bad matchup? Well, what has Tampa Bay done really well kind of the back half of the season? Like, what is it about them that's been successful? Well, they overwhelm secondaries, right? There's too many weapons on that team to match up for most squads. So, you know, you watch last week's game and you see, you know, Chris Godwin running a you know, essentially a flag route. You know, the Saints would call it a giant. And it's like, you know, they got their fourth corner trailing Chris Godwin with like no safety help. It's like not a good situation, right? He's going to be open by 6 yards. And it's because they don't have the people to put out there against them. That's the first thing for me when you look at the Bucs that the Saints provide that most teams don't, is we are so deep in the secondary. And they have guys that can match up. You have Marshawn Lattimore. You have Janoris Jenkins, who I'd make the argument has been our best corner this season. You know, everyone talks about Marshawn. He's been very good. But Janoris, I think, has been even better. You have Chauncey that we talked about. You know, you've got Malcolm Jenkins, who's played substantially better in coverage after the first 6 weeks of the season. So you've got a lot of pieces that you can kind of throw out there. The other thing is they've done a better job of kind of establishing the run, and the Saints have been absolutely dominant with them in that aspect. So, you know, they're making them somewhat one-dimensional, and they've got guys to match up. Now, what are they doing? You guys talk like X's and O's. The Saints have played them in a lot of trail cover two, and essentially what that means is you're allowing your corners to cover that guy without worrying about him going over the top. You're going to have help over the top. But you also are going to get to kind of like stay right on top of these receivers, right? You're not worried about the deep ball, so you're kind of sitting on everything underneath. And it's made Brady hold onto the ball a lot longer against the Saints. So you have a guy who's pretty reliant on the passing game, who doesn't like pressure, who's not able to necessarily find a bunch of really quick, short routes to get the ball out to. And his offensive line is broken down. So, you know, you go back to that first game, and in the first half, they're in the backfield like every play. But Brady's also holding on to the football in that game over and over and over again. And I think it's just a personnel matchup. It's something that the Bucs aren't really used to, that they haven't seen a lot of teams able to do to them. And it's not a really good matchup for them in that way.
And so,
you know, when I look at it, I go, well, has that changed any? And I don't know how it has.
Well, that's my question. Is you look at these two Tampa games, especially the second one, and it wasn't like Tampa can say, we had 10 penalties, they blocked the punt, they ran a kickback, we had 4 turnovers, and if we just eliminate all that, it'll be fine. Like, the Saints curb stomp them. So if you're the Saints and you know, hey, this is what they like to do, but it hasn't worked against us for 2 times. Like, how do you prepare if you're Sean Payton? What do you expect Tampa to throw at the Saints that's new, that's different, that they haven't seen?
Well, I think it'll be important for them. I think they're really going to try to establish the run. They've got to help their offensive line out. I think they've got to find a way. You know, they lost Alex Copa last week. In the second matchup, they didn't have Ali Marpet, who I think their best offensive lineman. And you know, what you watched in that second game in Tampa was David Onyemata, making a mockery of a backup guard. I mean, it was bad, right? Every play he was in the backfield. I think he had 4 quarterback hits in the first half. It's really wild. I mean, he's a D tackle, right? And it's not Aaron Donald, right? It's a guy it's a bad matchup up front. But I think they need to establish the run in this game. You know, they used, you know, Fournette a lot more last week. Ronald Jones has been hurt. He didn't practice yesterday. I haven't seen the injury report from today. I don't
practice today.
He did practice today. Yeah. So you got a guy that's kind of banged up, right? Should be available. Is going to want to be available, but maybe not at 100%. But them establishing the run, I think, is the thing that we have not seen them do that they know that they need to do. So, you know, you might see some variation in that, you know, more motion. What have the Saints, you know, really struggled to defend this year defensively? Boots and nakeds, you know, it that's really been an area where they have not done a great job. Maybe you see the Bucs do some of that. Obviously you're not wanting to do a ton of that with Tom Brady. And yet, you know, maybe that opens up some more, maybe that gives you more time. Just cause it's an area where the Saints haven't, you know, necessarily been real dominant, but you know, at the end of the day, you don't want to go into these games and like turn into a new team. Right. They've won 12 games now. So you don't want to like abandon ship and say, that didn't work. I think, you know, you still want to do what you're doing. I'm sure there's some belief that Antonio Brown, it was his first game with the Bucs when the Saints saw him the first time. So he wasn't really, you know, into the system yet. So, you know, they've had more time together. I'm sure they feel like he'll be more effective in this game. And you know, maybe we see him do some different stuff. Then I'm sure he was pretty limited in the first in that first game back. So, you know, at the end of the day, they're going to do what they do. I think we're going to see Tom Brady throw the football. Maybe they try to move him a little bit more. I think it's important they try to find a way to establish the run.
Well, Phil Simms had this thing that he said, the former Giant quarterback that's now on CBS. But he said, you know, when he was playing, the Giants swept the Washington team back when they were still the Redskins. And they played them again in the playoffs, and then they won a third time. But the way Simms put it, he was like, you know, all this stuff about it's harder to beat a team three times, and it's, you know, the thing about the matchups is there's no more secrets. Everyone knows the X's and O's, knows the matchups. The teams know each other really, really well. And Simms's point was it really just boils down to who has the better roster, like who's going to execute better and who has the better players. Because at the end of the day, it's really hard to get that far along in a season, play a team three times and catch them off guard with something. Do you agree with that?
100%. I mean, there's not magic, right? Like they're not going to sit down and say, well, here we can put all these routes in that they don't know how to cover, right? That's not going to happen. I think Bruce Arians in general, he is who he is. He always has. I mean, he's done the same things everywhere that he's went. He's been that same guy. They're not going to reinvent the wheel. I think in general in the playoffs, you know, there's a couple of things. People always talk about, you know, defense and running the football, you know, these kind of fundamentals. It's about executing. So you could have the perfect game plan and not execute it at all and lose by a lot and have the same game plan and execute it perfectly and win a game by 20 points. And, you know, so again, to that point, who does that give an advantage to? Well, it's absolutely the Saints. You know, this roster has by and large been together for 2 or 3 years, and it's the same system. It's the same offensive coordinator, the same defensive coordinator, the same play caller, the same quarterback. And so, you know, that continuity, when you're talking about talented teams, goes a long way. You know, there's no figuring out going on necessarily with the Saints. They're trying to put together the best plan they can, but they know what Drew does well. They know what Mike does well. They know what Alvin does well. So let's see how many times we can put them in positions, you know, where they can be successful. Whereas, you know, okay, well, how does Antonio Brown fit in between Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, right? Like Chris has been in the slot, you know, that's been his most effective place, but so is Antonio. So who's going to have that spot? And, you know, there's certainly more still going on for them trying to figure out how to maximize what they have. And so I would agree with Chris's assessment that, you know, you've got a better team because of that continuity, as opposed to the Bucks, who kind of threw this thing together, you know, in an off season.
All right, Zach, I'm a big believer in family and family reunions and that sort of thing. So when Mike Evans goes to the Superdome on Sunday, does he have to bring his father, Marshawn Lattimore? Does he have to bring him a gift? And if so, what kind of gift should he give his father?
I see what you're doing there. there's no question. Mike Evans is not a huge fan of Marshawn Lattimore. I will say in the first game, you know, and this was with everybody, he didn't have any yards. I think he had a couple of catches, but he forced about 3 penalties. And you see that with Mike a lot. He's a big physical guy. You see corners getting flagged with him a lot, which I find ironic because he's, you know, if you're big and physical, that means you're pushing, right? Like there's not necessarily like a physicality to just running. So, you know, he gets kind of, he likes to mix it up with DBs. And again, That's a great matchup for Marshawn Lattimore. He is a really physical cornerback. He's a big guy. He tackles really well. Like that's his wheelhouse. So again, you know, maybe, you know, if you're Tom Brady and you watch enough tape of Mike Evans and Marshawn Lattimore, maybe you go, hey, look at the bright side. I got 2 other really good receivers. Maybe I work on one of those guys a little bit more, but there's no question. Mike Evans has not fared great against Marshawn.
Listen, we stuff this podcast with ads like Jonathan Sullivan used to stuff his face with hot dogs during the pregame for Saints games. If you don't like the ads, sign up and become a patron today. Patrons get access to this podcast ad-free. No ads ever. And they get the Booze Bundle welcome box, 4 swag items, amazing, and a Saints player card, and you get access to the Discord channel. Why wouldn't you do it? It's 10 bucks. You're practically making money. So do it today. Go to saintshappyhour.com and sign up to become a patron. That's saintshappyhour.com.
Well, my theory, Zach, with this secondary is that, and I've told Ralph this, and you mentioned all the guys, Marcus Williams, Lattimore, both Jenkins, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. The personnel is there to match up with Antonio Brown, Mike Evans, Gronk, Godwin, all these weapons that they have on the perimeter. So my theory is, as long as the Saints don't have a mid-game injury in the secondary, and this is not to take anything away from the depth, because PJ Williams has had his moments and DJ Swearinger can play too, and they've got guys, but I feel like the Saints are in good shape and they match up as long as they don't have mid-game injuries in the secondary. But if they're in a position where they're having to go down the depth chart and all of a sudden, Ken Crawley, or hypothetical, Ken Crawley is on Godwin or something like that, that's where it can start to get more dicey for the Saints. Do you think that's fair?
Well, yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's probably in most situations. Obviously, the talent that they have makes that a bigger issue.
Right.
Having a guy that can really win there. I think it'll be interesting this week to see if the Saints get P. Rob's able to come back, because I think P. Rob's the kind of guy that can go in a game like that and really have a pretty positive effect. He can be effective, even against those types of guys. Not having him, I think it's probably a little bit more of an issue of are we going to have, if we lose one of those guys, is there someone sitting there that we can really trust? At the same time, it's one of the great benefits, right, in having two guys who are essentially press man corners. And you have that with Marshawn and Janoris. So what does it mean? Well, maybe we need to roll this coverage a little bit. Maybe the linebackers are settling a little bit more. I think one of the things that you have an advantage of with the Saints is, Dennis Allen, I think, who's done an incredible job, was a defensive back. Right. That's his wheelhouse. That's if there's anything Dennis Allen really, really, really is an expert at, it's how do I build these coverages to help my guys out? And I think they've done a good job adjusting throughout the year. But there's no question, when you're playing in the playoffs, you want your best guys on their best guys. And, losing any one of those guys in the secondary against a team with that many weapons is pretty tough.
All right, Zach, let's change gears for a second, and I want to talk about Fontenot. And I want to just talk about, as a fan, I don't see his day-to-day value. And I kind of just assume just as well get the draft picks, because that's something that's tangible that I can see. And I generally think Sean Payton and Mickey Loomis have everything under control. But everything you hear behind the scenes is, there's really brilliant people that help the organization win. And I'm just curious your thoughts on, there's more assistants getting interviewed this year than ever, and we may lose some assistant coaches. It certainly looks like Fontenot's headed to the Falcons as a GM, and Jeff Ireland is still getting some feelers as well. So can you just talk about losing him specifically to the Falcons and how big of a role that is to replace?
I'm surprised it's taken this long, honestly. People love to kind of try to steal from success. And if you want to talk about just simply building a talented roster, I don't know how that whole side of the building's not gone already. Terry Fontenot, listen, Terry's vice president, he's the pro scouting director, right? So when you look at free agent signings over the last few years, Terry Fontenot is kind of taking the lead on that scouting. So, you talk about a guy like Latavius Murray. They're in a contract negotiation with Mark Ingram. Mark's agent is looking for X amount of dollars. The Saints say, we're not going to commit that amount of dollars. They go to Terry and go, We need a running back that fits in the system that can be a consistent and positive performer. And, you know, Terry's role there is to say, I like Latavius Murray. He's available. I think we're going to, you know, from a pricing standpoint, you know, we think that he's going to fit in our budget. You know, I like him catching the football out of the backfield. He's physical. He's fumbled one time in 7 years. You know, he's been very productive down in the tight red zone. He does all these things well that we like about Mark, except he's going to cost half as much money. I would make the argument Latavius Murray's been a heck of a free agent signing.
Big time.
Especially when you consider what they've paid him, right? So, you know, he has been a, quite honestly, for a veteran running back that's given us the production he has, he's been a bargain. On top of the fact that he's been available, he takes care of the football. When he's had to step in to the primary role for Alvin, he responds with 200-yard games, right, in 2 weeks. So, you know, that's the world of Terry Fontenot, and I think he's excellent at it. First of all, general managers are more about picking players, right? You have a team of people, a lot of people are making suggestions, are you know, giving their opinions. And the GM's job is to kind of organize all those and make a decision. But ultimately, a general manager is the top of your organization, right? He's the leader. He's the guy that needs to run the show. And I think that's really where Terry Fontenot is going to thrive. He is just about as impressive a person as you can imagine. I'd be very hard pressed to find somebody that I'd be more comfortable leading an organization than Terry Fontenot. So,
yeah, but we don't want the Falcons to be successful, Zach. Terry.
Listen, I hear that. I will tell you this, and I love Terry. I want Terry to have the opportunity. I want him to have an opportunity where he's set up for success. And, you know, I know that the Falcons are lovable losers, so I don't know if that's the best place for him. But would it or would it not be the most Falcons thing ever to take our guy, but also in return give us 2 third-round draft picks?
Yeah, I'm here for it.
That's what will happen. So, yeah, right. I mean, it's just like, you know, they probably haven't thought of that, but listen, it'd be a really great hire for him. Yeah, you don't want to see the Falcons get better, but I also know this, and we see this, I think, with Jeff Ireland as well. You know, who's making these ultimate decisions? It's Mickey and Sean. And they're taking input from a lot of people, but those are the guys that are making the decisions for us. And you don't want to lose talented guys. And I think Terry will do a great job. I really do, wherever he goes. But I'm not worried about our state, right, and where we end up without those guys. I think that we're still in awfully good shape.
Well, I think the thing that's impressed me the most about Mickey Loomis is I think his superpower as a GM is he hires brilliant people. He hired Sean Payton. He was watching videotapes. They have like videotapes of assistants that would do like a videotape interview, like they were doing an interview. And Mickey Loomis was watching that, and that was his first impression of Sean Payton. And he's like, okay, that videotape of him doing an interview was really good. I want to talk to him actually. Like that, to me, of all Mickey Loomis's skills, that he can identify these people and hire them is his greatest skill for the Saints.
You know, Mickey, I've always found Mickey super fascinating. He's got a really almost a fascinating aura about him. He's very calm and collected all the time. He always seems very in control. You know, I negotiated a couple of contracts with Mickey directly, and he was always incredibly honest. Things that he told me were going to happen always happened. He almost had a way of like building a trust without giving you any information. He's pretty good at it in interviews. Like I laugh about it now with him. You know, we get off air, like trying to figure out how to ask you a question, knowing that you're not going to answer me. You're just going to give me some superfluous fluff that I'm supposed to try to, right? Like, and of course that's his role in that job, right? His job is not to be an interviewer giving a bunch of secret information. It's just to, you know, be the face of the organization and make those decisions. But you learn this in any industry. Success is predicated on people. So you can have the greatest plan in the world. You could have the nicest facility. You know, you can do all these other things, but if you don't have the right people in the building, then you're not going to be successful as a company. And so seeing the success in the Saints organization and knowing the guy who has by and large been responsible for the bulk of those hires, I don't think there's any arguing with your point, because you don't find success if you don't have the right people in the building. I think that's a great credit to Sean as well. You know, Sean, the coaching staff for the Saints, it really is amazing that they've been able to hold those guys together. You know, it really is. I mean, when you look at some of these guys around the league that get, you know, deals after a year of success, to watch the years and years and years of success that the Saints have without losing some of these guys, is it's amazing. But man, it's an all-star team. Aaron Glenn is going to be a fantastic head coach. I think Dan Campbell is going to be an outstanding head coach. I think Ryan Nielsen is if he's not gone this year, I'll be surprised. You know, Dennis Allen's going to get another shot. I mean, to have that many talented guys in the building at one time is a testament to both Mickey and Sean. And I think it's very represented on the field.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if they, it's going to be tough if this is the year where they kind of have a mass exodus and there's a lot of these guys that they have to replace. But, you know, this like kind of surfaces up to some idea of mine that's been percolating for a while that I've just always found fascinating between Peyton and Loomis and their relationship dynamic, because you just see so many people, you know, the O'Brien situation in Houston, where he has full control, it blows up in his face, and Urban Meyer's about to get hired in Jacksonville, and there's talk of him maybe having full control. And you just see so much of this around the league where coaches and GMs, they're control freaks, they have huge egos, and to get that far in life, you kind of have to be that way in a lot of ways, because obviously they've had tremendous success to get to where they are. And yet you look at Loomis and you look at Peyton and the way they work together, and I'll throw the Benson family in there too, because you need an ownership that's hugely supportive to pull this off. But it's always fascinating to me that they seem to have this dynamic where they check their egos at the door, they're able to work together, and there's just been this relationship between the two of them that has functioned since 2006 successfully. And it feels like it all starts with them.
Yeah, I think that's it's a good assessment. I'm glad you brought up the Bensons, because I think that's probably really underappreciated around the league. There are ownership groups in the National Football League that will keep organizations from ever being successful. There's no, like, you don't have a chance. And we certainly are not in that situation. I know, you know, from my time, there's no resource that you don't have at your disposal. There's nothing that Sean and Mickey ask for that they don't get. And I think this, all the support you could possibly need to be successful, the Benson family has always given, which is a testament to them. You know, with Sean and Mickey, it's funny to like bring that up right after talking about Mickey. Mickey has this kind of cool, calm, and collected personality, right? Like, when he's telling you something, I always feel like he knows something that I don't know. It's interesting, right? You just, yeah. He just kind of got this way about him where it's like, I'm going to learn something right now. But he's very calm. I think he's very deliberate in what he does, the decisions that he makes. I think he tries very hard to not be emotional. I think that's hard at times. I mean, he's still a human. So when he's talking to Drew, is there an emotional component? Absolutely. You know, but he's the opposite of Sean Payton, right? So Sean is emotional. Sean is, he's got like this like passionate energy about him. He's everything kind of has a purpose. He's 100 miles an hour. And, you know, Sean does think sometimes that he probably 10 minutes later is like, man, you know, I probably shouldn't have done that. you know, and so I think that they mesh so well from a personality standpoint, right? They're genuinely friends, right? Like Sean and Mickey will go on vacations with their significant others together, right? Like they will want to go somewhere and go play golf. I've played golf with them before. They're friends, right? And that's helpful. But I think what has made them work is that both of them appreciate that the other one has an attribute or two that they don't possess, and that they appreciate the benefit in that attribute. And so, you know, we would probably maybe move a little too slow in terms of progress if it was just Mickey, because Sean always wants to do something right now, right? Like, This is a complete guess, but I'd be willing to bet over the last few years, there's been times where Sean really wanted to sign somebody that they didn't have the money for, that wouldn't fit in the system, but man, there was an issue, you know, a need, and he wanted to fill it right now. And Mickey's going, it's a mistake. And Sean respects him enough to go, he's probably right. And in the same way, you know, I think that there's a lot of that passion that Sean has that Mickey lets go, right? He's not going to, if Sean says something that's a little bit prickly in the media, Mickey's not going to say anything. He probably agrees with it, but he also is going to let him breathe a little bit and, you know, be who he is. And I think that's why they work, and they work very closely together and have for a very long time. And usually eventually that gets old, right? Somebody sours on it, but I think there's just a ton of mutual respect between them. I think, you know, Mickey to this day really thinks that Sean is exactly who he thought he was when he hired him. A brilliant offensive mind, a great communicator and leader. And those are the things that you need to be a great coach. And I think that Mickey has proven to Sean over time, you know, Sean didn't hire Mickey. So Mickey has probably, you know, as much of a, not necessarily proving himself, but I think that over time, Sean really respects what Mickey brings as an evaluator and as a leader of the organization as a whole. And I think he probably knows, man, Mickey's probably kept me out of trouble a couple of times, you know, making a quick and rash decision. And so I think they mesh really well.
All right. That's the breaking news siren, Zach. My confidence with the Saints winning Sunday is starting to wane again. I need you to tell me the confidence that the Saints have. What's the confidence like in the building and the vibe that you get from that you've gotten from everybody this week?
Well, you know, it stinks because I'm not in the building anymore, right? This like this new world that we live in has eliminated my ability to walk into the locker room and act like I still play. Which, by the way, is a really interesting phenomenon when, you know, half that room's like, who is that guy? Like, why is he just walking around in here, right? It's kind of a weird situation. Now it's going to be really weird because I missed the whole season of it. But they're supremely confident, I think. I think they've been there, right? I think that's the hardest thing to kind of explain, like, what makes Tom Brady great in the playoffs? He's been there. Nothing feels too big. Nothing is, like, unusual. Man, Mike Evans has never been there. Lavonte David's never been there, right? You've got guys that are feeling their way along. And the Saints locker room largely has all been there. Even the guys that were brought in this year, like you bring back Malcolm Jenkins. Well, he's won two Super Bowls, right? He's experienced it. He knows the feeling. You take, you know, the guys that have grown with this team since 2017. They've been in the playoffs. They've played in these games, and they know exactly what it feels like to lose them. They know what it feels like to win them, and they know that they don't want to have the former, right? They know that we have to find a way to win these games, and you've seen that throughout the year. They've been – early in the season, I think 8 games in, we had been trailing by at least 10 points in like 4 games. That's a huge deficit in the National Football League. Mm-hmm. Right. And they came back and won 3 of them. Right. I think that group knows that they can accomplish what they want to, but they also know just how fragile the playoffs are and how easy it is to think that this is your year and have it not be. And so I can't imagine a situation where that locker room is cocky. Right. I mean, they've had so much trauma over the last 3 years, just like the fans have. I just think it's a cool confidence that they kind of bring into games now.
All right.
Are you feeling better, Ralph?
I am, but I need this from Zach. You know, we have old Mora sound bites that we play on the podcast, and we always give our predictions. We ask for our star of the day. So if I play this.
They won't even bring him to camp. He looks like our star of the day for the Saints.
Give me a name that fans aren't talking about, that we're not thinking about, that's a key for Sunday's game for the Saints.
I'm going to go inside of the Saints offensive line. And I don't know that it's a name. I think I'll say that whole interior of the offensive line. You know, when you look over the past few years, pass rush has been an issue in the playoffs. Now, the Saints have been really beat up on the offensive line the last few years, but I don't think this secondary can hang with the Saints anywhere near the level of health they are on the outside right now, right? They're talking about getting Traquan back. So, you know, you're talking about being full strength at the skill positions. I don't think they can hold up in coverage. As a matter of fact, I know they can't. And so then it comes down to, okay, well, can you affect the quarterback? If they are able to play outstanding, and they need to, right? It's a playoff game. Like, these are the games you need to play at your best. Then I don't think there's any way that the Bucs stop the Saints.
Wow. I like that.
I just think there is far too much talent on the outside. It's still a tough team to run against. You know, I think Sean will commit to it. He'll do enough of it to keep them clean. But, man, there's a lot of very enticing matchups on the outside that they can create. And so, to me, it's about holding up in the interior and giving him time and letting him operate. You know, I don't have concerns about the guys on the outside. But I think that interior, you know, has had games this year where you know, they've become a problem. And I have a lot of confidence in them, more than most people do. I think it's a good group. I just think they got to play that way in this game.
Awesome stuff, man. Well, hey, Zach, thanks for coming on. We owe you big time. And I'm looking forward to being back down in Louisiana at some point soon so we can do a beer at Port Orleans or a pizza slice at Pizza Man.
I can't wait. I want that vaccine in my arm yesterday. I cannot wait for my life to get back to normal. I want to do a live show where we're drinking beer and people are being ridiculous at Port of Orleans. I cannot wait. But, Zach, thanks so much for joining us, guy. Hopefully the Saints win Sunday and we can carry this on a little further with the Saints in 2020. So, everybody, thanks for joining us. Become a patron. We're the best Saints podcast on earth, number 3 in Malta today. So, for Andrew, for Zach, I'm Ralph. We will see you after the big game Sunday night.